Today, more compelling evidence about regional branch closures. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. This is a continuation of our series of posts relating to the evidence provided to the hearings on Friday in Canberra surrounding bank branch closures and the broader issues that they raise. This is, of course, from Robbie Barwick and the Citizens Party, who made a very compelling case for a public bank.
Thank you, gentlemen, and I do formally welcome representatives from the Australian Citizens Party. I do want to also thank and recognise both of your efforts in both following the inquiry at some cost to yourselves all around the country, and also just your involvement generally. It's been very, very useful, and we appreciate your interest. I understand that information on parliamentary privilege and the protection of witnesses giving evidence to Senate committees has been provided to you. For the Hansard record, could you please state your full names, the capacity in which you appear today?
Robert Barwick, Research Director, Australian Citizens Party.
Glenn Isherwood, Executive Member, Citizens Party.
Great. And you probably heard before, if you could keep any opening statement brief, that would be really great. And Mr Barwick, do you want to...
I cheated by submitting a very long one. This is the abbreviated version. Thank you, Chair and Senators. The Australian Citizens Party appreciates the excellent work of this committee and this opportunity to appear. Australia's exclusively private banking system fails the Australian people and the Australian economy. The system is dominated by the Big Four banks and Macquarie, which are too powerful, too concentrated and completely out of touch. They are making bigger profits than ever out of their customers, but they don't want to serve their customers. They are gaslighting Australians, claiming that when they are closing branches and removing ATMs, they are simply following our choices to bank online. But this inquiry has demonstrated they are closing profitable branches on which communities depend, severely disrupting and harming those communities. In truth, they are trying to force their customers into digital banking to boost the profits of the banks, not benefit the customers and communities. The only industry that can dictate to customers in this way is an oligopoly, a cartel. Everyone knows this is what we have. Last week in the Australian Financial Review, Alan Calder called it a bankocracy. As the 2004 Money Matters in the Bush inquiry declared, banking is an essential service. Therefore, it is up to Parliament and the government to ensure that Australia has a banking system that guarantees all Australians can access this essential service. Besides regulatory measures, the Australian Citizens Party urges this committee to recommend the Commonwealth Government re-establish a national people's bank, like the Commonwealth Bank before it was privatised, a government-owned bank to break the banking oligopoly and serve the community in ways the private banks won't and can't. In our view, there are various models, but the model for a public bank that would be most politically feasible, straightforward to establish and immediately effective is one that starts in post offices and expands as necessary. Only a people's bank will end the bankocracy and re-establish financial democracy. And we know a public post office people's bank will stop the Big Four banks in Australia from closing branches because it's happened before. In 2002, when Kiwi Bank started, their banks, which are owned by our Big Four banks, stopped closing branches for 7 years straight. They'd closed 1,300 branches in the two decades before that. There were no branch closures in New Zealand for 7 years straight after Kiwi Bank was established. That's why we support this solution to this inquiry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr Barwick. And I'll go to Senator Roberts first.
Thank you both for appearing today. And I also acknowledge and thank you for your party's work in the electorate generally, in the community, and also especially on infrastructure and banking. I've read Craig Isherwood's The Australian Precedents for a Hamiltonian Credit System, an outstanding article. So perhaps you could tell us about my first question by saying, what is the history of success of public banking?
Well, I think it's stellar, and we only just have to look at our own history in Australia. And we had an excellent government bank until 1996 for 84 years. We had over a century of public banking in general with very, very successful state banks as well. But if you look at, just take the Commonwealth Bank as the best example. It started in 19...
The old Commonwealth Bank.
The old Commonwealth Bank. It started in 1912 as a postal bank, originally operating out of post offices. What it was able to achieve as just a government-owned bank operating throughout with post offices was incredible. It provided banking services to the Indian Pacific Railway workers when they built the Transcontinental Railway line. It, in World War I, Prime Minister Billy Hughes needed to buy shipping in a hurry in London. He called up the Commonwealth Bank governor and the money was provided straight away, and that became the Commonwealth Shipping Line, which later became the Australian National Line. In World War I, when trade was at real risk because of the war in Europe, the Commonwealth Bank funded commodities pools that allowed the Australian economy to keep operating. The Commonwealth Bank provided the brokering services that allowed the government to raise enormous amounts of money through war loans, and what would have cost millions of dollars, the Commonwealth Bank was able to provide those services for something like £700,000 at the time. The Commonwealth Bank funded enormous amounts of local government infrastructure. The road network in the Western Australian Wheat Belt was funded by the Commonwealth Bank during the war years to allow that wheat to be harvested and taken to where it needed to go. That was all done through the Commonwealth Bank. Things like the Newcastle Power Station that allowed Newcastle Steelworks to establish, the Commonwealth Bank funded that. And then the final thing, they funded 5% home loans to returned soldiers so that returned soldiers could actually build homes. That's what that bank, largely operating out of post offices, was able to do, and it left the private banks for dead. And one final point, in 1914 there was a bank panic. There was a danger of a massive bank run all around the world. There was a massive one in London. The only bank that didn't have a bank run in London was the London branch of Australia's Commonwealth Bank. And in Australia, there were no bank runs because the governor of the Commonwealth Bank put out an announcement and said the Commonwealth Bank stands behind the private banks. That's what that bank was able to do. That's an incredibly successful story.
Is that the RBA?
Just have you finished? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So that included, that was publicly owned and included the RBA. Yeah,
to be honest, central banking hadn't really evolved in the country like Australia by then.
Right.
It wasn't thought of as a central bank. In the 20s, it got the note issue power, so that became more of a central banking function.
Yeah.
But the RBA evolved out of this bank, and then in 1959 was split off.
Right. Thank you.
So, also, Mr. Barwick, you're familiar with the North Dakota State Bank, or the State Bank of North Dakota. It's a people's bank.
Yep.
It's the only bank, sizable bank in America that has made a profit every year of its existence, correct?
Absolutely. It was the only bank, it was the only safe bank in the 2008 financial crisis, the publicly owned bank of North Dakota. And North Dakota, thanks to owning its own bank, is the only state in the United States in this last 20-year period of financial tumult that hasn't run into severe economic and financial difficulties as a state government, because it's had its own bank with which to fund the sort of things it needs to do.
I can sympathise or agree with you entirely that having a public bank puts enormous accountability on the other banks. They have to be honest. So how do we know that a public bank will work and stop the other banks closing their branches?
Well, that's just to say what I said a little bit earlier. We know it will work. We know it will stop Australia's big four banks from closing branches because it already has, just not in this country. It happened in New Zealand.
So the other banks will have to keep a presence, a proper bank presence, bank branch presence in regional towns, because the Commonwealth will get their customers otherwise. Oh, sorry, the postal bank would get the customers otherwise.
If banking was a normal service, if banking was still a normal service, I would still be rock solid in my confidence in saying that. The only thing I'm questioning now is how banks actually see their service. We've had appalling stories come out of this inquiry where banks are not functioning as banks anymore. National Australia Bank has totally defied the request of this committee to pause branches, and it's been sending fact sheets to over 50 towns around Australia telling them why they're closing their branch, and they say they're closing their branch because the use of the branch has dropped off. But in July this year at the House Economics Committee,
They admitted to Chair Daniel Molino that they do not count the visits that don't involve transactions. So if they do not count them, how do they know the bank visits have dropped off? Because you ask every Australian who goes to the bank what bank queues are like now. They're large and they're consistent.
So I'm just rushing because of the need to get through these topics. Obviously, a public bank, a people's bank, must be free to compete, so they must be untethered. But what model do you propose? A post office, extension, Suncorp, now looking at privatising that, that's an idea we've come up with, a government bank, a new start-up, what do you propose?
Senator, we propose legislation in this place to create a statutory corporation or an equivalent to Australia Post now. It needs to be done through legislation, and the capital of the bank would, like the original Commonwealth Bank, be able to start operating through the general taking of savings and deposits. And that was the beauty of the way Dennison Miller started the Commonwealth Bank. He did it without any need for capital. I just say on this question of competition, we had the 1982 Campbell report. The assertions in that report were that as a result of deregulation and privatisation, we would improve the quality of banking services in the country. The private sector would become more efficient in providing regional towns with bank services. However, they foreshadowed that in the scenario of privatisation and deregulation of banking, that you do have the danger of oligopolies forming, mm-hmm. which would be to the detriment of communities. And in that case, they said that public banking would be necessary. Robert has some quotes here.
We would like to table Chapter 27 of the Campbell Report from 1982, because what it said would be solved through increased efficiency, supposedly from deregulation, hasn't happened. You can read it in the report. It clearly hasn't happened. And the oligopoly phenomenon it warned about has happened. And in that report, the Campbell, in 1982, the Campbell report acknowledged that the main role of a public bank in Australia was competition for banking businesses in particular areas, example, retail banking. The potential for government banks to provide services on reasonable commercial terms may check any tendency for a dominant market position to be exploited. And it went on to say that public banks give competitive leadership in an oligopolistic industry. It's just that they said by deregulating and creating more efficiencies, that would solve that problem, and it hasn't. No. And an example of that, as one particular area, is small business lending. When the Commonwealth Development Bank was privatised along with the Commonwealth Bank in 1996, the Wallace Inquiry said that, again, repeating Campbell, that efficiencies of the market would replace that small business lending facility that the Commonwealth Development Bank had provided. It didn't happen. Subsequent inquiries showed that, there was an inquiry in 2010 that showed there had been a collapse in small business lending. Now, that particular, I think that's a point for this committee to take on board. That inquiry, despite having that testimony, was not prepared to go far enough and say that we should go back to a government bank model. They decided to stick with the private bank model and make certain recommendations. They didn't work. In 2017, Kate Carnell, the chairwoman of COSBOA, a small business organisation, she called for a government-backed bank for small business lending. In 2021, Guy DeBell, having done the Reserve Bank a study, pointed out that there had been no improvement in small business lending in Australia to essentially replace what the Commonwealth Development Bank had done from 1959 to 1996. And when Sir Robert Menzies legislated the Commonwealth Development Bank in 1959, the Commonwealth Banks Act, Sir Robert Menzies was not some socialist labourite. He was a blue blood liberal. He emphasised that the importance of these public banks was the competition they provided for the private banks. But the people who have the ideology that runs the show today
totally ignores that.
Okay, last question, the Chair's, Tommy. Public banks have been enormously successful. The Australian, Craig Isherwood's article, The Australian Precedents for Hamiltonian Credit System, is a wonderful article for people to read. I've read other books about the Commonwealth Bank. It was amazing. What's stopping it now, the old Commonwealth Bank? What's stopping a people's bank now? And is it the fact that the banks, big four banks, currently hide behind regulations that are too complex, too intrusive, so that small businesses, other competitors, cannot haven't got the legal horsepower to get into the regulations?
I believe what's stopping it now is what caused it to be privatised in the first place. It's reflected in Chapter 27 of the Canberra Report. The report acknowledges the complaints of the private banks then that they had to compete with the public bank. They complained about competition then, and every time it's come up ever since, such as in the 2022 Regional Banking Task Force report, where there is a discussion of a public bank solution, the Regional Banking Task Force report dismisses that idea on the grounds of competitive neutrality, which is code for the banks not wanting to have to compete with a public bank. So my question to the committee, as a rhetorical question, given the behaviour of the banks, given what they've done to these towns, I think given that they have dealt themselves out of the debate morally, should that concern be what decides the outcome of this issue? I don't think so.
Thank you.
To add to that, Senator, the Kiwi Bank example, there was a lot of resistance from the major parties in New Zealand to that bank being created, but it took the determination of one leader, Jim Anderton, to not take no for an answer. King O'Malley fought for the Commonwealth Bank for 30 years. He had to put together the torpedo brigade of Labor members, but it took ruthlessness because he is up against very powerful banking corporations. He was then, and we're up against that today. They will leverage their concentration of the market, which is 80% of all lending in Australia, to knock this down. So you do need a Jim Anderton, you do need a King O'Malley in this place to not take no for an answer, to take that determination forward.
Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Roberts. Senator Stirl.
Thanks, Chair. And I know we've got an eye on the clock, but in your opening statement, Mr. Barwick, you talked about Kiwi Bank, and for 7 years the majors didn't close. 7 years up to now. I'm sorry, I don't know how long Kiwi Bank's been going.
So Kiwi Bank started operating in 2002.
All right.
Okay. There were no bank closures until 2009.
Okay, you've been. Sorry, I'm not going to. But I am going to rush you because I did others. Okay, but now it's. Now it's open slather again. They've gone off again, is that right?
Only because, and this is just a political lesson that you have to be mindful of, ironically, it was Kiwi Bank that started the closures again. And that just reflects the fact that this was a bank that was achieved by the rule of one man. So when successive governments in New Zealand, or subsequent governments in New Zealand that weren't as supportive of the bank, put limits, restrictions on it, didn't allow it to grow. I mean, they've limited its growth, right? And so that, as management changed, they took a different model. But I think the relevant point for the committee is from the standpoint of its competitors, private banks, it worked to stop branch
banks. Yeah, OK, and listen, let's just get this clear. I'm no friend of the banks. You've heard that, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not quite sold on the public bank yet. And the reason I say that, have you done any research, and you can take it on notice if you want, as to what this would cost, and are there any councils that have passed motions saying we want our own bank? Maybe you could explore that a little bit.
We have 21 councils around Australia so far that have passed motions supporting this. The research we've done relates to what Glenn mentioned earlier in terms of a model. There's various models. Some would incur an upfront cost, such as either establishing a standalone banking corp. So what we propose, and I think this has to be explained to Australia Post, we are not proposing Australia Post get its own banking licence. We don't think that would work at all. Australia Post management should run Australia Post, but currently post offices are agencies for multiple banks.
Yep.
We propose there should be another bank, that post offices can be an agency for that one as well. Yep. But this is one that would be committed to sharing the revenue with the post office and supporting postal services. In terms of start-up costs,
You could buy an existing bank, and Senator Roberts has proposed that. You could, the government could establish a brand new banking corporation, or there is already a government bank. It's called the Reserve Bank of Australia, and it was split off from the Commonwealth Bank, and we're saying you could put a retail bank back onto it at no cost. The Reserve Bank already has the balance sheet.
Okay, but you haven't got, there isn't any evidence, there's no work being done to say this is what the base of it would cost.
We can use the Kiwi Bank example, though. It costs $60 to $80 million start up in 2002. They repaid that government capital within 2 years. Right. Today, it's worth $1.5 billion.
All right. Now, just the last one. Of course, my fear is, and I know people, there is a absolute white-hot hatred of the banks and the majority of Australians, but what would be the guarantee, or what would be the stick-in-the-carrot approach for them to leave those banks to come into... Have you done any work around that?
Well, yeah, because I have consulted widely on Kiwi Bank, and I could, in answer to the Chairman's questions to Emma Dawson, I could provide some recommendations for witnesses as well from New Zealand. When they did their business model over there, the people who were involved in setting up the bank told me they were a bit daunted because their business model required something like 2 customers to sign up per week per branch. And they thought, well, would that happen? As it happened, that concern was unfounded. They were swamped with customers. They very quickly raced to 700,000, 800,000 customers because there is that anger out there. Senator, and if you take an example that's come out of this inquiry, Commonwealth Bank has said that it's prepared to modify its behaviour and to meet the demand out there, but in a conditional way. They've said, we'll be here for 3 years as the branch bank. We'll put a 3-year moratorium on branch closures. Prove to us you want a bank or else we're going to leave. And I don't think that's good enough to actually persuade customers to come over. I think Commonwealth Bank's putting the cart before the horse. They should commit to the communities, then the communities would commit to them.
Thank you, Senator Stirl. Now, look, we are running out of time, but again, I thank you, gentlemen, for all your efforts and a lot of good evidence this morning. I just had one question. I suppose I'm concerned with, the only concern I have with the Government Bank is, would it, if it were just to sort of try and fill the gaps and fill these rural areas that and some regional areas that the banks are leaving, it would struggle to me to see how that would be a profitable venture, given one of the underlying reasons the banks are going is because it is, at least, it's challenging. It's challenging for a commercial entity. How do you envisage this bank working? I mean, would it presumably try and then get customers in metro areas as well, because otherwise Absolutely. It would struggle to be
it
viable?
Would need, if it's going to operate as with Australia Post as its agency, there's no reason why it wouldn't operate in every yep. Australia Post in the country.
I think the government should commit to a full public bank and really provide competition for the Big Four. When you're out of the room, I quoted Sir Robert Menzies in 1959, emphasising when he split off the Reserve Bank, the Commonwealth Bank and the Commonwealth Development Bank, that the essence of it was competition for the private banks.
Right.
And we lost that in 1996. And unless we get that back, you can regulate to improve the bank's behaviour, but they have the most highly paid lawyers in the world and they will take those definitions and turn them into something that benefits them. Only competitive pressure really cuts through and you want it nationwide.
And can I just ask about the Kiwi Bank situation? Are they across New Zealand and have they targeted, it hasn't just been tried to target the rural areas and some
no,
such?
No, absolutely. They're across New Zealand because, yeah. The Kiwis, I think, saw the light earlier. They privatised all their public banks just like we did in the 80s and 90s. And the gentleman that Glenn referred to who founded Kiwi Bank, Jim Anderton, he led the fight back against that and succeeded, thanks to their electoral system largely, in 2002. And so the public appetite was for a proper public bank, not just a gap filler. Because if you limit it that way, then, you know, it'll be a smaller operation. But can I say, the beauty of government is you can create a bank that does run at a loss for a while so that credit starts flowing back into those regional communities. And as I've said in my extended opening statement, because right now the Reserve Bank is in the red
what, $20 billion or so, to simply to prop up what are the most profitable banks in the world, Australia's Big Four. So why is not anyone questioning that? The government could actually take that kind of burden on to provide credit back into regional communities, and in doing so, create opportunities for more profit for the communities for banking. You will see a rush of the private banks back into those communities. They would never take that lead. A government bank can take that lead.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
If I may, I would like to just answer Senator Stirl's question from earlier about projections of how many people would change to this new bank from their existing banks. In this inquiry so far, we've heard from the Big Four, and they say that about 90% of customers won't change even when their bank branch in their local town is gone. It's a logistical nightmare. I'd suggest that the number of customers of a new public bank is directly proportional to how badly treated they are by the private banks.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both of you for all your efforts through our inquiry. It's been very helpful, and enjoy the rest of your day. I'm not sure.
So there you have it. Compelling evidence, definitely worth considering. Next time, we'll hear from Dale Webster, the journalist who, of course, was one of the prime movers, alongside myself, in getting this inquiry up in the first place. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.